Welcome, and thank you for standing by. All lines will be open for the duration of today's call. Please mute your line when not speaking, or you may press star six to mute. Star six again will then unmute your line. Today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. Now I will turn the call over to Ms. Stephanie Vega. Ma'am, you may begin.
Thanks, Kelly. Hi, everyone, and welcome to the 2011's RTC Jazz Open Mic Series. The topic today is Agile Development Practices Using Jazz, Part 2, Implementation. My name is Stephanie Vega, and I work for IBM Rational as a technical support engineer for Rational Team Concert and Jazz. In the continuation today, our speaker is Johannes Rieken. Johannes has been on the planning team since its early days and has worked on both clients and server. He is all about agile and pragmatic software development and became a certified Scrum Master in 2010. Johannes leads the planning team since the winter of 2010. We will be having a web conference today with the presentation material. To join, please go to www.webdialogs.com/join, conference ID 3133836. Again, that's webdialogs.com/join, conference ID 3133836. Johannes will be sharing his knowledge throughout the hour, but all the lines are open, so please feel free to jump in and share your questions and ideas. At the same time, since all the lines are open, please keep your line on mute if you're not speaking. And now I introduce our first speaker, Johannes. Go ahead, Johannes.
Thank you, Stephanie. Thanks for the introduction, and thanks, everyone, for dialing in again. As mentioned, this is the second part of last week's topic about agile software development, how we do it. And so last week we covered, let's say, two-thirds of the topic, and so I want to give a quick wrap-up before we dive into the development or the implementation, how we use it. So in general, we have seen some bits about agile in general, like what is agile, the agile manifesto, and what is not agile, what's the core principles, and some details about it, and sort of like the bottom line message is that agile is not easy, but it's also not a revolution. It's more like considered to be back to the basics. So this is how you would do it if you would have never heard about any other processes. And so then we talked a bit about agile in the RTC world, about the Eclipse way, which is constantly evolving, so that it maybe should not be called Eclipse way, but the our way. Some details about that. Also pointed out how iterations plan get managed and how they get populated from all different sources and how we execute on them. So that was the bottom line of this. But apart from planning and having work items and tracking progress and being agile, it takes also a bit to structure and organize your code, your build engines, your delivery modes, your processes regarding end games and reviews a bit. And this is what I want to talk about today, and I encourage everyone, as we had it last week, to always ask questions, because I don't think I will cover 1 hour with the slides that are remaining, so feel free to ask questions and we can chat. Nevertheless, I want to start with the slides, and the first slide is about the development. And development actually means, in this scope, how we manage our source, because as you can imagine, it's a very big project, and it's a lot of source code, and it's also a lot of different components or teams. And so we came up with the metaphor that that it's better to isolate work and not people. And our source control system, our SCM, actually supports that by design. So with the notion of workspaces. So every developer has many workspaces, and those workspaces, although they live on the server, they're at first private to the developer itself. So this is the individual isolation for your own work. So you can freely try something out. You can back it up into the repository workspace, or you can share it with your team members if they want it. So what we, for instance, do if we have a new starter on the team, if he works on something, I can just pull his changes into my workspace, and then I can review it or test it, and then I can make changes and give it back to him. So this is how we isolate work on a certain task and not let someone sit alone and work on it until he's done. The second level is streams, which is sort of like isolates a component or a team or a project, so like the next level from the rest. And that means, so if you look at the Jazz project, there's a lot of common components, like a repository component that handles all the database infrastructure. And that component is used by all the other components, like a work item component or planning component or process component. And so this team, they all have their repository workspaces, and they have their own stream which hosts all the changes of the repository component. And those changes, this stream can be adopted by the work item team, for instance. But, excuse me, is there a question?
Sorry.
Oh, no worries. So we have that that stream, and we can just pull the changes from that stream, but we only do it once a week, for instance. So the repository team, they can work freely on their stream. And when we have agreed that whatever they do is good enough to adopt, I will talk on about that later, then we can take the changes. So it's a hierarchical approach of flowing changes between different teams or even persons. And that makes it very easy to keep the code base stable for a certain amount of time to develop without being broken by an incoming adoption. The other thing is to isolate is the SMS, this suspend and resume technique. So you can so the typical example is you work on a new feature and you have touched a lot of files and made some changes on the data model and on the UI, and it touches a lot. And then you see this is that an urgent or a very critical bug comes in, and you want to fix that bug first before you continue working on your feature. So by now you're in a weird state, right? You have a lot of changes in your workspace, and you still want to fix the bug. But to be able to fix the bug, you want to have the same state as the system in production. So what you can do, you can have your changes all in one change state, and simply say you want to suspend it. And what it does, it restores your workspace with whatever state has been before, and then your workspace is in a comparable state where you can actually reproduce and fix the critical bug. That then allows you to make another change set, deliver that, and once you're done with the critical bug fix and you want to continue work on your feature, you simply press the resume button on that change set, and your workspace and all, like your IDE workspace, will be resetted to the state before you wanted to fix that bug. So it's very easy to, if you work on something and you say, oh, this is not important anymore, you just set it aside and start with something new on the blue, so to speak. Another point is to isolate work is we have the process isolation on the team areas. So we have different teams, like the planning team and the work item team. And every team can define their own rules by which they want to play. So, for instance, delivery rules or how they want to, what they require as minimal parameters on work items to be a good work item, how they want to have their reviews and approvals. So, with all that, we want to embrace the collaboration between people, but also the isolation, so that you don't get spammed with so many requests and that you don't mix them up and get them together, because it's always better to work only on one thing. On the next slide, you see the stream setup that I shortly mentioned, and you see it's very complicated. So there's so what you see here, you see in the middle is the JS integration. That's the highest level of hierarchy. Let's look at the little leaves around it. So you see a stream for work items, for requirements, collaboration, coverage, build, and those usually correspond to a team. So there's a work item team, and this work item team, they have their own stream. So that means it's more or less a copy of the of whatever JS integration is, but that copy is only synced once a week. So that means when you start off, you pull a copy of JS integration, and then you align whatever is JS integration, the whole source code. And then the work item team might only, from that stream, might only own 5 components of the 15 components in there. And during the week, they work and make changes, but they only change the 5 components. And then the next week, they want to update again. So what you do is, the work items teams, they push their changes to JS integration and accept all changes that are incoming from other teams. So, for instance, the requirements team, they have done the same maybe, and so they make their changes public, and then the work item team can adopt it again. So that makes sure that once a week you have an updated JS integration and all updated streams for the teams, but during the week you're isolated. So that helps to stabilize, because maybe in the requirements team they break something so that the work items teams are blocked for a bit. And so you can argue that they should never release a change that breaks, but that happens. And it's easier to manage if you only have to be at a very good quality once a week. And this is how we came up with this model. So the JS integration is supposed to be the holy grail, the stable bit. This is where the integration build runs off, and then the team streams, they can be a bit more unstable. But when you synchronize your stream with JS integration, you should be very stable. And we ensure that with integration builds, so with continuous builds. So the continuous builds usually run off the team streams. And you can only, or you may only deliver to JS integration if your continuous build is green. So otherwise, you're very likely to break. So in particular, how are we doing this? Is we have a weekly job that is assigned to everyone on the team, and that's the buildmeister job. And the buildmeister has to make sure that all these changes happen. So that we adopt the new changes from the integration stream to the team stream, that the team stream changes go into the integration stream, and that the build is green. So the build might make sure the continuous build is green. Only then I can deliver back to JS integration, because otherwise I will break all the components. Also, the build might task is to do adoptions. So if an underlying component, like the a repository component, for instance, if they have an API change, or if they deprecate something or recommend something new, the buildmeister does all that in its own repository workspace and then delivers back to the rest of the team. Apart from that, it's important for us that everyone can be the buildmeister, because we don't want to have specialists on the team, so everyone should be able to do everything. Also these tasks, which are administrative tasks. So the next slide, which goes hand in hand with that, is about the build process. So because it's a big project, you want to have builds that run in the background, and builds means something checks out all the code, compiles it, runs the test suite, and builds a distributable product. So this can go wrong in many places, right? The worst thing is it doesn't even compile, and something went wrong horribly. The second thing is that happens quite frequent, that you have a test failure, maybe a random test failure, or that actually something is broken. And the third thing is to have executable bits. And there might be sometimes issues with the packaging or a missing license or something. So because there's so many things that go wrong, and actually what you at the end, which is being sold, that is the outcome of this build process. So you better make sure that you always have a good build. And so the idea is to actually have that. It must be very painless and more or less fully automated. So in Jazz, we have the build system, and we always run builds. So for the teams, like the work item team or the planning team, there's a continuous build that runs every day in a two-hour cycle. So every 2 hours, there's a new continuous build, and we monitor closely if the build is green or red. And if it's red, it's the buildmeister's task to ping the component lead or the developer who made the build red. Another cool thing about that is personal builds. So I don't know, you might be in the situation that you had a big change, and then you're unsure if it breaks or not, and you don't want to run the whole test suite on your computer because it's very, I don't know, it's 20 or 30 or 50,000 tests, and it takes 2 or 3 hours. So what you can do, you can just tell the build engine, okay, take my repository workspace and run a build from my repository workspace. And if that build is over, then you're pretty sure that your changes are non-breaking, and then you can deliver, and then you can kick off another continuous build and see if it actually is green. That's very helpful. This is how we work a lot, especially now in the end game where you don't want to break anything anymore. Another thing which we have recently added here is auto deploy. So we also have, once the builds are good and green, we have auto deploy technique that deploys and installs servers on different virtual machines, so we can always test the latest build. That comes very handy, but that's a bit proprietary and not part of Jazz yet. On the next slide, you see the stage build. So I quickly covered that already with the personal build. So the personal build is actually missing here. That should be the first bullet. But as we said, it must be a stage of progress because otherwise we have some startup and bootstrapping problems. So the first thing is we have a team build, or the build of the stream that is continuous and discovers component problems. So if the planning team has a failing test, then we see that very quickly there, and it's very local. So if I make a change, I see our build is red, but not the work item team's build is red. Then there is nightly builds. So so you can do a nightly integration in a different workspace just to see if it works. So the workspace hierarchy and how they're connected is unlimited. It's a graph, so you can always have a different copy of JS integration that takes all changes and build up there. More importantly is the third bullet, the weekly integration builds. So this is the responsibilities of all the build meisters, and you may only deliver back and forth, as I said, when the build is green and when you have a good feeling. And the idea behind is the result of an integration build should always be good enough for self-hosting. So that's a bar you have to reach. And what we often do is before we deliver or declare something as good is that we say that we do a little smoke test. So we actually go through all the features, the base features, and see if it installs and does the basic things that we do 99% of the day. Then the next stage in the build is a milestone build. So last week we talked a lot about iterations and milestones and tests and fixed passes. So at the end of the milestone, we run more integration builds and we test a lot more, and every fix goes into the next build. And then at the end of a week, so that takes a week usually, we have a build that we say it's not only good enough for our own use, but it's also good enough to give it to the community and potentially to customers. Well, reality is that it doesn't work like this. The stage building, of course, it works, but you often have more, you have test failures more often than you would like to, and then you have to rebuild and run a new integration build, and then it takes 5 hours. So it's not as painless as it seems, but it's still the best thing we can imagine for having a good quality. Having said that, on the next slide, this is our build tracking, our dashboard, so to speak. So we're closely tracking the build quality. So this is done by the development manager or by anyone who looks at the build. There's also an overall JS integration buildmeister on here. She looks at all test failures and assigns bugs to the teams and makes sure that they get fixed as soon as possible. Also, we have all these viewlets on the dashboard and the develop, like in the Eclipse embedded, and we have a big wallboard here in Zurich in the office, which always show if the build is green or red. So this is how we track it, because a red build, you don't want to have it, so we have to make sure it's mostly green, and if it's red, to make some pressure on that. So the next slide is apart from like some, now I've mentioned about source control and build. So the end of the iteration, when we have more and more builds, it's about stabilizing. We call that end game, the mini end game, so to speak. And the idea behind it is even though you continuously test, there's always some glitches and some bugs. And before you want to have a build that goes out onto to the community, you want to make sure it's in a very good quality. So what we do is we create a test plan. So every team or every developer has to write down what major new features he implemented in the last week. And we track that in a wiki page. And then we have 2 days of testing. So, and it's not a testing team, it's actually the development teams that test. And usually we discover bugs, more bugs than we would like to find, but it's good to find bugs. And then we spend 1 or 2 days on fixing these bugs. And of course we are not fixing all the bugs, and also we are only doing very careful bug fixing. So you're often in the situation where you have found a critical bug, and then you look in the potential fix, or first you analyze your problem, and then you see, oh, this is a big issue. And then you're looking into the fix, and you want to change 100 lines of code, and then you see, no, this is too risky. So what you do is you try to do the actual minimal fix, even if it's not the proper fix. But you want to you don't want to risk any regression. So we carefully fix these bugs. And as I said, sometimes you only do the minimum fix and then make a follow-up task for the next milestone to implement the real fix. And then you test again. So it's another day of testing. And all these fixes, they can only be done if you have a team approval, a code review, and sometimes even PMC approval and a second code review. So it's really strict and locked down. So the last day, that's usually a Friday in such a week, is the sanity checking day. So what we do then is we verify every single bug that has been fixed in that week, and also like severe bugs from the whole milestone. That's usually a little bit boring, but it's very good. So we'll see. Sometimes we see that actually some defects are not properly fixed, so we have to reopen them. And it's a good exercise to find some glitches and look at the code a little better. And then finally, once it's good, all the team leads have to sign off in the track build item. I've showed that last week already. So all the team leads have to say, okay, this build, particular build ID, is good enough for self-hosting from my point of view. And if all team leads do that, the idea is that the whole build is good. And usually after that, we deploy. So this happens on a Friday afternoon. Everyone says it's good. And then on Monday, when you come to the office, the new build is deployed and good to be working. And that's a very nice feeling. On the next slide, I want to outline something slightly different, which also goes into the implementation, how we do this. Zoo, it's about process awareness. So you might know that RTC, especially the RTC client, has some is process controlled. So that means certain actions, like saving a work item or delivering a code change to the team, can be monitored and advised by a rule. And that sounds a bit odd in the beginning, but actually the process advisor, this is how the actual UI is called in the client, that's your friend, because he tells you, okay, dude, what you're doing now is will be embarrassing, like delivering code with compiler errors. So when I was in school, we always had the rule that you have to buy pizza for everyone if you have checked in compile errors. And now this doesn't happen anymore. Not because I got better, but because the tool tells me, dude, don't do this. You will regret. And and in the same way, we can configure all the rules. One rule, for instance, is in the end game, you cannot deliver without a review. Or you cannot deliver without the team approval. Also, we lock it down sometimes. If we have new starters, they cannot deliver at all unless someone else of the team has reviewed the change. So you don't have to be like you don't have to care about so many things, right? It's sort of like the built-in checklist. Is the copyright good? Is the are there no compile errors? Are there no warnings? Did you run the test? Is the review a bit okay? So the whole idea is that there's a good friend in the background telling you if you're about to do something stupid or something you will regret. Every team can control it, so every team has its own rules, and you can play by your own rules. You can also disable it. You can say, I want to be able to overrule everything. So even if the team advisor tells you not to do this, you can say, I want to do this anyways. So it's not restrictive. It's not a bumper guy that doesn't let you do it. It's more like someone to tell you, are you sure? So this is about the process. On the next slide, it's about the process, how we do it, and this is about retrospective, which I have mentioned last week already. And of course, how we did it, we have a special work item type. The work item type is retrospective, and it's going to be assigned to a team. So if the planning team or the work item team is meant to do a retrospective, the PMC creates a work item for me, assigns it to me, and then in the team we discuss it, and then we fill it out. And the whole idea is to tell, okay, what went well, what didn't went well. What did I like? What are the highlights? So we always say, okay, I really like this new feature, and I really like how this new starter took off. He's really good. And so this is like the 1 or 2 hours where you can be honest and where everyone can say, I don't like this or I like that. And so the whole idea is that you actually get something out of it. So whatever, like the outcome of the retrospective that's received by the PMC, and often there's critique in it. So it says like, okay, we need faster build engines because the build it takes 2 hours, and we want it to be only taken 1 hour, or whatever you can think of. And this is what we do in the retrospective, and then the PMC actually installs our sort of like recommendation. So the retrospective is part of the big end game, which is shown on the next slide. I assume my slides are a little bit different now. Right. So the big end game. So I mentioned the little end game, which is only a week at the end of the milestone. But we also have a big end game. So after 5 or 10 development milestones, depending on how the overall project plan is, and we have a bigger end game where we produce all the release candidates. And so this is where we go from feature mode into bug fixing mode, and then from bug fixing mode into no more fixing mode. So this is where we are currently now with the 3.01 release. So now we are in the RC3. So currently the rules are I can fix a defect only if I have a component approval and I have a team member review. From next week on, we will be in RC4, and then I can only fix a defect if I have a PMC approval, if I have a team lead approval, and 2 team member reviews. So you see, the it will slow down to not introduce regressions. And so no more new development, and it's just a sequence of test and fix, where these sequences always get shorter and shorter. And we want to hire the burden to fix something, and we want to hire the burden to release something to avoid regressions and to keep the people calm, because often at the end of the iteration, everyone is nervous and finds a little bug embarrassing that a customer might never see, but he wants to get it fixed because it's sort of like his personal issue. And then someone has to say, I understand this is a bug, but I see that it's not so severe that we should fix it, given the risk of regression that's always around. So on the next slide, it's sort of like almost wrapping up a bit. So what else is important? So we had retrospectives, we had the SVM, the continuous build, the process. And so what I think personally what's most important is the transparency. So who's doing what? You want to know that. So don't even try to hide if you're a developer. Just see yourself as being out in the open. And the RTC actually makes it impossible to hide. So whenever I close a work item or deliver a change set, that my whole team can see that, and everyone can subscribe to my events. And don't even try to hide. It doesn't make sense. So it's, I can understand how that happens, especially when you're a new starter, but it's a lot easier to open to work out in the open and to benefit from that. So if you turn it around, so this is usually our recommendation. When we have a new starter, we tell them, okay, just subscribe to all the changes of a experienced developer. So we take someone who's very experienced, who's here for, I don't know, 2 or 3 years and knows the code good. Well, and then you can subscribe to all the changes he does. So you see all the work item comments, so you get a sense of the style. You can see all the work item changes, so all the code changes, so you can see what is a big fix, what is a small fix, how's the overall code style, how do we approach things, how do we communicate with customers or other team members. So that's, for new starters, it's very valuable, and it's also very good for the overall awareness, because then you see, hey, dude, you're working on this. I'm working on a very similar issue. Let's collaborate on this one. So the transparency is very, very important and helps you a lot once you get adopted to it. So the second thing is traceability, which is cool. So I talked about builds and streams and stuff. So this is the usual case, right? You have your build is green, and it's green, and the next day it's still green, and then it's red, and no one knows why it's red. So there might be a test failure, but you have no real clue why the test actually failed. So what you can do, you can actually compare 2 builds. You can say, okay, I take the last green build and the first red build, and then I compare. And it will list you all the changes that went in between those builds. And once you see the changes, you also see the change sets that are associated with it. And then you have a pretty good idea about what went wrong. So usually that boils it down to only a couple. especially if you have builds that run every 2 hours. And then it's very easy to narrow down the problem. Sometimes you might even find the code and the code bit, and you can always, in every code file, you can say annotate, and then it highlights every row by author and by work item. So this helps me to trace down a bug, a build failure, but it also helps helps me to understand code. So often you look at code and you see, and you think that doesn't make sense, or you don't understand why this change was introduced because it's not obvious. And then very often you just say, okay, annotate or show me the history of this file. And then you see all the work items that were like that were sort of like the drivers for the changes in this file. And then it's very very easy to understand the history of some code path. Because in the beginning, all code is nice, but after a couple of years, every code bit has some hacks in it or some things that are unclear or don't fit into the overall design. So it's very good to be able to replay the evolution of the code. Yeah, and the third item is the team first. That's especially useful if you have a big project like the Jazz project. So we have many teams, and every team is managing itself. So there's no overall team structure or overall team rules that must apply to everyone. Like, yeah, as I said, every team can decide what it does. So those are the other important bits. And then that also already brings me to the last slide. It's some recommendations. Well, there were always like recommendations along the way, but so one is, of course, have a good build tool. So you want to make sure just, you know, like press one button and then you have a product. That is important because it tells you, okay, it compiles, it tests, and it builds something that you can install. Yeah, have unit tests. I don't think that needs to be mentioned anymore in the year 2011, and iterations. I cannot reiterate how important the iterations are. It really helps to narrow down the scope and what you plan and what you want to do. Makes it just more easy. You can foresee items that happen over a short period of time a lot easier than over a long period of time. That's just a matter of fact. You can also execute the plan, execute test thing easier. And if you mandate that the end of the iteration produces a deliverable that can be consumed, like talking about self-hosting or talking about customer satisfaction, that your customer says, "Oh, this already works," or like, then you're on the right way. Yeah, and the last bit is the retrospective. So always look back. What have we done? What is good? What is not good? And then change. So it's not set in stone, your process, and it might change over time. So things that didn't make sense yesterday maybe make sense tomorrow. So always be open to change in the process. Not only change in the requirements, it's also changing the process. Just stay open-minded to change. That is, so to speak, the last recommendation I can give. And with that, I'm actually done with the slides, and I would encourage questions about what I've said today or also what we have discussed last week, or just something in general about Agile. No one.
Hello. Hi.
Hello.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah, actually, I have one question. You said within a project area, the team you know, the team can control, you know, themselves, right? So if there are multiple teams and, you know, inside one team there is a Scrum Master which can control the iterations, right? But how can we do the access control over all those teams?
Mm-hmm.
Let's say, you know, if I'm the Scrum Master of one team, maybe I'm, you know, I can also, you know, change the iteration for other teams by accident, I mean.
Okay, yeah. So iterations are defined based on the project level. So maybe you have to get, like, so on the team you can define your process in the sense of do I need to review or do I need two reviews, or do I mandate that a code check-in requires that you have run the test first. The bigger items, like what are the iterations or what are the targets on the project area level, so that is done sort of like by the project area admin.
So that's in the higher level. It's not in the team level. Okay.
Yeah, that's in the higher level. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, does anyone else have any questions for Johannes before we conclude the session? Okay, I would just like everyone to remain on the phone quickly. Kelly, could you please do the polling question now?
Thank you. At this time, we will take our polling question. After the question is asked, please respond by pressing star, followed by the appropriate digit on your phone. Was this session useful? Star 1 for yes. Star 2 for no, star 3 for somewhat useful. Once again, was this session useful? Star 1 for yes, star 2 for no, and star 3 for somewhat useful. That concludes our polling session.
Thanks, Kelly. Thank you, everyone, for joining today, and as well, thank you, Johannes, for speaking again at the second part of this open mic session. Join us next week when we will discuss work item and process customization with guest speaker Andre Wienan. Thanks, everyone, and have a great day.
Thank you for participating in today's conference call. You may disconnect at this time.